Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, wrapping up a marathon day on KHOI after hosting Local Talk this morning, and joined this evening, 12 hours later, as always, by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Leading Heartland. Laura, I may be weary, but we're going to go, and it's good to have you here again.
Good to talk, Dennis. Always a lot on the agenda.
Oh, do we have some stuff tonight, indeed. We are only 4 weeks away now from the general election, and believe me, there's plenty of campaigning still to come around Iowa, but last week's news was dominated by two major political debates around the state. Both were televised on the same night. One was between Iowa's Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley and his Democratic opponent, Mike Franken. The two clashed on abortion, inflation, health care, and other issues last Thursday night. Laura, let's start with abortion.
Yes, this is a key issue. All the polls are showing that it's an issue near the top of mind for voters. Senator Chuck Grassley, when pressed, said that he would not support legislation to have a nationwide ban on abortion at 15 weeks. He said that he's felt that it's a state's issue. Now, in the past, he has sponsored federal bills, federal abortion bans, a federal constitutional amendment on abortion. But he said that was before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And Mike Franken, of course, has said that he would codify Roe v. Wade. He wants some federal legislation that would say that would set a certain level and that beyond that level, states would not be able to infringe on reproductive rights.
And Mr. Franken said he supports, again, taking federal level action to support abortion rights, denied Mr. Grassley's comment that he, Franken, wants abortion available almost at birth. We're hearing that from some other Republican candidates.
Yes, I've been spent some time this past week looking into this. This is a talking point that Republicans around Iowa and around the country are using to try to place themselves more in the middle. The polls nationally in Iowa show that the majority of people did not support the Supreme Court's action in overturning Roe v. Wade. And so Republican candidates are saying, look, these Democrats want to allow abortion on demand up until the point of birth. And it's not accurate. Most places, Iowa, for instance, has banned third trimester abortions for decades. But even in states like New York and California, where they have codified Roe at a state level, they still ban third trimester abortions. At least in New York and California, they ban most abortions after 24 weeks, which is still in the second trimester. So the talking point doesn't really relate to reality. But we did hear it in the debates here, and I expect to hear it in the debates that are still to come in this campaign.
Abortion, a big campaign issue for Democrats, as inflation is a big campaign issue for Republican candidates, and it was a big issue on Thursday night.
Yes, again, Senator Chuck Grassley and other Republican candidates are talking about how, in their words, that President Biden's agenda has been responsible. The heavy federal government spending to get the country out of the coronavirus pandemic has led to the inflation. The Democrats have talked about other factors being involved in inflation, for instance, price gouging by oil companies. They've also noted that around the Western world, inflation is at or near 40-year highs. So it's a kind of a supply chain bottleneck issue rather than directly related to any federal government policies.
And of course, a lingering issue from 2021, the peaceful transfer of power after the invasion of the U.S. Capitol. And both candidates talked about what might happen in the next election. And Mr. Grassley said he would support changes to the Electoral Count Act of 1886.
Well, Mike Franken several times tried to bring up the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th, and Chuck Grassley kept saying he wants to talk about January 6th because he doesn't want to talk about this, that, or the other. But I did notice that when one of the panelists asked Senator Grassley, if you had stood in for Mike Pence, would you have voted to certify the electoral count? And that the senator just didn't answer the question. He said it's not a legitimate question because it didn't happen. So it's interesting. He did, in fact, both senators from Iowa did vote to certify all of the electoral results. But I was a little bit surprised that the senator didn't want to answer that question more directly during the debate.
There was another issue that had been brought up before the debate the week before. It was a controversy at the time. It may be fading a little bit. And that is that Mr. Franken had been accused by a former staffer of providing an unwanted kiss to that staffer. It came up during the debate. And hours before the debate, that staff member, the former staff member, released a statement saying, and I'm going to quote part of it now, "Anyone who knows me knows that I am honest to a fault. Michael Franken kissed me without my consent. It happened." She continued, "I hope we can all step back and take a look at how we treat women who come forward and how we react to their stories. What happened to me and what is happening now is not my fault. It is his." All right. That sounds quite convincing. Mr. Franken was asked about it. He said it was unfounded.
Yes. To be clear, I don't think that Kimberly Strobe Bogus released that statement like as a news release to the press. It was something that she had told the journalist Liz Lenz, who wrote a feature on the Iowa Senate race for Politico, and Politico published that article shortly before the debate. But I'm not sure exactly when the statement was released. But yes, Mike Franken has said consistently that the matter was unfounded. The police report said that the Des Moines Police Department ended up not investigating it because they determined that the incident as reported did not rise to the level of any crime committed. So in fact, they didn't investigate it. And so that's why they closed the case as unfounded, which is different from saying that something didn't happen.
So do you think this is going to play a role in any voters' minds?
I think it's baked in right now. I mean, I don't think that it will continue to grow as a story. I think everybody who's politically engaged in Iowa has heard about the story at this point.
And let's quickly wrap this part up. Senator Grassley got an endorsement last week from a former Montana Democratic U.S. Senator, Max Baucus of Montana, who had worked with him in the Senate for 30 years, and he endorsed him. Was that a surprise?
A lot of Democrats were upset about this. Max Baucus and Chuck Grassley worked closely together on the Senate Finance Committee. At various times, one would be the chair and the other would be the ranking member. And when Max Baucus was the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, he often deferred to Grassley. He took Grassley's proposed amendments into account, and they did work closely together. So I think of this endorsement as a throwback to maybe the more collegial Senate of decades past. But the only part of it that surprised me is that Max Baucus in retirement has come out to be a little bit more progressive than how he projected when he was in the Senate. For instance, a few years ago, he said he would support a healthcare reform that would create a single payer healthcare system. And that's something that Mike Franken has said he would support, a single payer or a healthcare system similar to what the veterans have or people who serve in the military have. And so if Max Baucus supports that, then why would he ever endorse Chuck Grassley? But again, these are two men who worked together for a very long time. And so they're from a generation when this kind of cross-party endorsement was much less unusual than it is today.
Let's move on down to the other debate that took place same time last week on Thursday night, the third congressional district debate between Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn. Abortion and inflation again playing major roles in this debate. But first, let's talk about what appeared obvious on the air. Those two really don't enjoy each other very much.
They don't. It was a really contentious debate. I mean, it's normal to throw a few barbs back and forth, but I've been watching all of the candidates' joint appearances, and both in this KCCI debate that was last Thursday, and then again on Sunday, both Cindy Axne and Zach Nunn appeared on KMA Radio and Shenandoah at a candidate forum, and they really don't seem to like each other. It is the race does seem to be a little bit more personal than some campaigns.
Right. Okay. Abortion played a major role. Both said the other's position is extreme.
Yes. Cindy Axne has been running ads for months now talking about, and also the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has been running ads saying that Zach Nunn raised his hand during a Republican primary debate when asked, should abortion be completely illegal with no exceptions? He did raise his hand. Zach Nunn counters that when he was in the legislature, he voted for some abortion bills that did have some limited exceptions. And as I discussed earlier, he is one of the candidates who has said Cindy Axne has voted to allow abortion up until the day of birth and even after birth. And that was a point in the debate when Cindy Axne seemed really genuinely offended, as she said that that's just ridiculous and offensive to say that women are going to carry babies to term and then let's just say kill the babies. You know, she seemed genuinely angry about that.
She did. And she often turned to him during the debate in seeming anger to respond to something he had said. It was an interesting contrast in this debate to the Grassley Nunn, I'm sorry, the Grassley Franken debate, which was generally handled on a gentlemanly level, if you will. But this one was very personal, very personal.
Yes. I mean, for instance, when Chuck Grassley made that same allegation that Mike Franken supports abortion up to the day of birth, Mike Franken sort of said wryly, "Oh, that's a surprise to me." Like he was disagreeing with it, but he didn't say that's a lie and that's outrageous and that's offensive. So the Cindy Axne, Zach Nunn debate was definitely much more in the mode of accusing each other of lying about various issues, and abortion was one of them.
And of course, Axne and Nunn disagreed on inflation in ways that you might expect, but this other issue came up that had come up a week or so before, proxy voting from France. Nunn criticized Cindy Axne for using a proxy vote for President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act in September and said Axne was, his words now, lying to us because she used the coronavirus pandemic as the reason she missed her vote. She was in France.
Yes.
And she defended herself.
So remember, this is the bill, the budget reconciliation bill, that all came together in a short period of time and in late July and ended up coming to the House floor in August when the House members expected to be on recess for almost the whole month of August. So the Republicans have been hammering Cindy Axne on this for some time. The letter that she signed, it's basically a form letter that the Democrats sign if they're going to use proxy voting. And it says, due to the coronavirus pandemic, such and such and such, so and so is going to be casting my vote for me on this day. So technically she did. It's not as if she didn't go out on TV and say, the pandemic is making it impossible for me to vote. This is the form that they signed. And one thing that she mentioned during the debate, which I actually hadn't realized, was that 178 House members voted by proxy on that bill because they were all expecting not to be in Washington at that time. And in fact, Marionette Miller Meeks, a Republican from Southeast Iowa, also used proxy voting that day.
So is this much ado about nothing as far as the electorate's concerned?
Well, I don't know about that because the Republicans are putting a fair amount of money behind the advertising. And I think it feeds into Nunn has an overall campaign strategy of calling Axne a liar. And so this is part of it, not only on this issue, but on other issues. So I think this is something that they're going to keep discussing, or at least it's going to stay on the air in ads. It definitely seems like the Republicans want to make this a major part of the campaign. Another thing that Cindy Axne said that I forgot to mention is she said, as a busy mom, you know how hard it is to coordinate. My kids had 3 weeks off from school during a time when I wasn't going to be in Washington. We haven't had a vacation like this in a long time, and I'm not going to apologize for spending time with my family. So that was an interesting way to turn the issue around.
And just for transparency, that noise you heard during your response indicates somebody's at my front door, but I'm not going to answer it. I'm on the air with you now. Also, Cindy, got to be transparent. Cindy Axne released a campaign ad saying that Zach Nunn spied on students when he was a student at Drake University, saying he used a baby monitor at Drake University 2 decades ago to spy in an office used by the student body president. How do you rate this ad?
Well, I've seen this floating around Facebook for a few months now. So I was thinking that it might show up in an ad, either one that Cindy Axne paid for or one that some other Democratic group paid for. Here's the deal. Iowa is what's called a one-party consent state for recording. So if I have a conversation with anybody, I can record that and I don't have to disclose that I'm recording. But what Zach Nunn did is he left this baby monitor running when he wasn't in the room. So that is more like eavesdropping, and that is actually illegal. That's like a no one in the room was consenting to being recorded. So the Des Moines Register coverage of this is featured in Cindy Axne's ad. And technically, it is against the law. But at the time, the Polk County Attorney's Office said that they weren't going to prosecute that. They weren't going to charge him. And they felt that it should be a college disciplinary matter. And I believe that he was removed from the student government over that issue.
Oh, yes. Televised ads. Those are paragons of virtue, aren't they? They're always fun during a campaign. Now, let's take a short breath here. It's 14 and a half after the hour, wherever you're listening to us. And you're in tune with KHY Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, somebody at my front door, with Laura Bellin, who's not at my front door. And we're here every week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style. All right, let's talk about the one other debate coming up in a couple of nights. Ashley Hinson, Liz Mathis, going to debate this Wednesday night for the 2nd Congressional District. And what's so interesting about this, aside from the fact it's the first of two debates that they're going to have, is that it's going to be put on by the television station that both worked for as reporters and anchors.
Yes, most of the what's now the second congressional district that covers most of Northeast Iowa, most of that is in the Cedar Rapids, Waterloo TV market. And both Liz Mathis and Ashley Hinson worked for a number of years for KCRG, which is the most watched local news station. So it's interesting. They are both very comfortable being on the air, very comfortable answering questions with public speaking and staying on point. And I expect that to be a fairly sharp debate, but maybe with not as personal as the third district debate.
And you can see it on KCCI-TV in Des Moines. They will simulcast it at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, as well as KCRG in Cedar Rapids, KWQC in the Quad Cities, and KTTC-TV in Rochester, Minnesota, and Mason City, Iowa. There we've covered all of it. Let's talk quickly about another debate. This involving, my goodness, Tom Miller and Brenna Byrd having a debate, and somehow they got to talking about abortion.
Yes. I mean, it's a big issue. And everything that the Iowa Supreme Court did and the U.S. Supreme Court, it just raised the salience of this issue in almost every campaign in the country, truthfully. So they were asked about how they would approach the issue. Brenna Byrd, she said that she's pro-life. She would defend any laws that the state legislature passes on abortion. And she was critical of Tom Miller for not defending the law that Republicans call the heartbeat law and opponents call the 6-week ban. This is the law that was passed in 2018 and struck down, and Governor Reynolds is trying to resurrect. And Tom Miller stepped back and said his office is not going to represent the state in that effort. And she was very critical of that. Tom Miller said that he thought that it was a mistake for the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, that Roe v. Wade, he described it as a balanced approach that allowed some restrictions on abortion, but generally gave women the right to choose. One thing that Brenna Byrd brought up that it was interesting to me that she brought up that early in his career, Tom Miller was anti-abortion. And I do remember that he was from Dubuque. Most Democrats from Dubuque in that era were pro-life. And during the 1990 Democratic primary for governor, that may be one of the main reasons he didn't win that primary, that he was not pro-choice. He changed his mind later during the 1990s and said that he had just changed his mind after considering the issue.
And we should say that, of course, we're talking about the attorney general's race, Tom Miller, the Democratic incumbent, longtime incumbent, and Brenna Byrd, the GOP opponent. She released a new campaign ad against Mr. Miller. Her first one, of course, was memorable because it was the Give Him the Bird ad that we've talked about so many times here. This one targeted Mr. Miller in a complex case involving a transgender individual.
So I thought this was coming because in 2010, when Brenna Byrd, who at that time was not married yet, so she was named Brenna Finley, she ran for attorney general that year, and she ran ads saying Tom Miller was not tough on crime and particularly that he wasn't tough on sex offenders. So I was ready for this kind of an ad to come up. I wasn't familiar with the case. I read up that Ian Richardson of the Des Moines Register wrote a fact check a couple of years ago on this case for the USA Today and Des Moines Register, because it was something that was making the rounds on social media. So it's a complicated case, but the essence of it is that somebody who is a sex offender and serving a prison sentence went through a gender transition. And the person did serve the full prison sentence. The ad makes it sound like he was that the perpetrator was released early because of a sex change. That is not accurate. The sentence was released. So the question was whether this person was at such high risk to reoffend that they could be put in a special civil commitment program that Iowa has. And it's kind of a high bar to put somebody in that kind of a program after they've completed their prison sentence. And this was something where initially the Attorney General's office was going to try to do that. But then after this, Josie Smith started going on hormones that would reduce the testosterone level, the expert opinion was that her risk of reoffending was reduced. And so the attorney general dropped the effort to put this perpetrator in a civil commitment program. And then later, the person was found with an unauthorized phone that had child pornography on it. So it is very complicated. The ad is not quite accurate. The person wasn't released because of a sex change. And the attorney general doesn't have sole control over whether someone was released in that circumstance.
Right. And there was one other debate we want to briefly talk about involving the two candidates for state treasurer.
Yes, they met on Iowa Public Television, Iowa Press on Friday. And Robbie Smith, who is the Republican, he's in the state Senate from the Quad Cities area. He had two main lines of attack. One was that he felt that the current treasurer, the long-serving treasurer, has been elected 10 times, Mike Fitzgerald, that he's not enough of an advocate for taxpayers. And he was upset that the treasurer's office hasn't been out there taking a position advocating for tax cuts. And he said, if he's elected treasurer, he's going to advocate for tax cuts to return this, these surplus funds to the people. And he also criticized the management of a couple of programs, including the college savings program. Treasurer Fitzgerald said that his office, that his job is to be the banker and the steward of the state funds, that it's not about setting the tax rates. That's something for the legislature to do. And so that's why he's generally not taken a position on bills, either to raise taxes or lower taxes, that he kind of he didn't use this term of staying in his lane, but that was the gist of what he was saying. And he said that Iowa has had a top credit rating since 2008, and that's something that he's proud of.
Now everybody knows what we were doing last week. We were watching television.
Lots of debates.
Deidre DeGeer, big story here. We have talked over the weeks about Governor Reynolds releasing campaign ads in her reelection campaign. Even the Libertarian candidate has released an ad, a What the Hell Kim ad involving marijuana. That was his quote, not mine. And now Deidre DeGeer, the Democratic candidate, releasing her first ad. It's called No, Take It From There.
Yes, I just say the Libertarian, I don't think he's up on TV. I think that's just an online ad, Rick Stewart.
Well, there you go, Rick Stewart.
Her ad is first up online. I believe it's going on television tomorrow. It is a combination of introducing herself, but primarily it's about Governor Reynolds saying no to investing in education and talking about that the governor wants to put direct public money to private schools. Tries to fit a lot into one ad, frankly, because normally normally a challenger would start out with an ad introducing themselves before they would get to the negative about the incumbent. But the DeGeer campaign is a little bit strapped for cash. So that's why they're on this kind of a compressed schedule. So people are standing in line asking for things and somebody keeps stamping the paper saying no, 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 no. And Deidre DeGeer says, I'll be a governor who works with both parties so Iowa can start saying yes again.
Yeah, it's a very crowded ad. It's very well done. And the question is, will it make a difference? You have results. You've just heard about an Emerson poll involving the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race.
Yes, Emerson College polling. This is a statewide poll. It showed that in the Senate race that Chuck Grassley was ahead by 49% to 38%. So that's a pretty healthy lead, although incumbents always would prefer to be above 50%. But an 11-point lead, normally people would be happy with that. Kim Reynolds had a larger lead over Deidre DeGeer in that Emerson College poll. This was a 53% to 36%. And 40% of the respondents didn't know enough about Deidre DeGeer to have an opinion about her. And I think that speaks to what we've discussed in the past, that the financial disparity in this race is just so great that Deidre DeGeer hasn't been able to introduce herself to a lot of the electorate.
So both of those poll involving both of those races is similar to the earlier Des Moines Register poll, which showed Reynolds with a 17-point lead, slightly different numbers. Grassley had an 8-point lead. So here we are 4 weeks out and the Democratic candidates are 11 points behind and 17 behind. Is there any good news there for Democrats?
No, I mean, that poll is definitely not what not what Democrats wanted to see. I believe that within the next week or two, Ann Seltzer is going to be coming out with another poll for the Des Moines Register, an Iowa poll, and she has a slightly better track record than Emerson. So I think Democrats are just going to be hoping that that poll shows a smaller margin. But it's getting a little bit late to make up that kind of a ground in this campaign.
Yes. All right. Let's go down to Todd Helber. Polk County jury found that, and we should say he's running for state auditor against Rob Sand. He's Republican. Polk County jury found that he was wrongly fired in retaliation for reporting illegal conduct at the state alcoholic beverages division. Bottom line, he's just won $1 million in a whistleblower lawsuit, and that's a big deal for him.
It is. I mean, I'm sure he wasn't happy with the timing to have this go to a jury trial right in the middle of his campaign for state auditor. But at the time that he sued a long time ago, he couldn't have anticipated that he would be the GOP nominee for auditor. The state probably, I would guess, is going to appeal. They do generally appeal these employment cases. I don't think they filed a notice of appeal yet, though. But he was the comptroller for the state alcoholic beverages division. He reported at a certain point that he wasn't going to sign off on certain invoices because he thought they were overcharging. And then he was was demoted, or at least he was told he had to report to somebody else. And then soon after that, he was fired. So this is a retaliation lawsuit. And as you say, he was successful. The jury awarded him $1 million. It's not the final resolution of the case because the state does still have the option of appealing.
Meanwhile, his opponent is Rob Sand, of course. He's the incumbent Democratic state auditor who appears, from everything we know in terms of money and all of this, to be cruising toward reelection. Never certain, but it appears that. He got conservative endorsements from 31 people last week, and he's a Democrat. That's a big deal.
It is. I mean, including one sitting state legislator, Dave Maxwell of the Poweshiek County area. This is one of the people that who Governor Reynolds campaigned against in the primary. A couple of former Republican legislators, a couple of very senior former people in the Republican Party of Iowa, and then a number of local officials and former officials who are Republicans who said that he is doing a good job. He's being a steward of the money. And in fact, his latest, he has two television ads, and the latest one features one of these Republican endorsers. Rob Sand is going to be spending over $1 million on television. He is up in all four major TV markets, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Sioux City, and the Quad Cities. And Todd Halber just doesn't seem to have much going with his campaign at all.
And Mr. Sand released a couple of campaign ads since we were last on the air. The first one, well, the second one, the most recent one, is a rather conventional ad. But the first one is quite creative. If you are a fan of the television show The Office on NBC TV years ago, you know how that was filmed. It was a group of people working in a paper office who would turn to the camera and give grimaces or expressions or comments about what was going on behind them. It was an innovative filming technique. Rob Sand has just done the same thing with an ad. It's called Annoying. It is absolutely a spitting image of The Office television show.
Yes, I mean, that Rob Sand in his first campaign in 2018, he used a lighthearted touch with his ads. He had a humorous ad featuring his wife talking about how cheap he is and a lot of laugh lines in that. The Office ad, I think it worked very well because people who were fans of the show enjoyed the ad. But I have to confess that I don't watch The Office and I still thought it was a funny ad. You could tell that the people were annoyed. He was turning down the thermostat. He was counting every paperclip. He was interrupting somebody who was sitting at their desk playing solitaire on the computer. So the idea is that he's very diligent. He's a penny pincher and people have to stay on their toes. And that was followed up, as you said, by a much more conventional ad that was just released today. But the theme was similar, that this is somebody who's a longtime elected official from Northeast Iowa who said that for the first time under this state auditor, he senses that officials are fearful that if they mishandle money, they're going to get caught and there's going to be trouble.
We have 90 seconds left. Let's talk about one issue not involving a campaign. This is the Des Moines City Council last week nixing a role in abortion. Des Moines City Council members decided abortion and reproductive rights matters should be left up to state and federal governments. This became the subject of a heated debate last Monday night.
Yes, Councilmember Josh Mandelbaum brought forward this resolution. They wanted to say that the Des Moines police shouldn't be investigating cases related to somebody having an abortion or performing an abortion in the city of Des Moines. And Indira Shoemaker was the only fellow city council member out of the seven of them who voted for that resolution. The others said that they just didn't think that this was something the local government has the authority to regulate. And it's just something that is regulated at the state and federal level.
Abortion and inflation, you're going to hear that between now and Election Day. Those are the two major issues for the two parties, respectively, and we're going to be talking about it over the next 4 weeks. Well, Laura, here we are, another week closer. We have another debate coming up this Wednesday night, and it is a gigantic one. We've talked about it. It's the second congressional district. But next Monday night, the governor and Deidre DeGeer debate.
Yes, and that will be very, very closely watched. There's also going to be another second congressional district debate next week. But that governor's debate, in the past, there have usually been three debates for the governor candidates. But this year, Governor Reynolds agreed to only one. So that's going to be it.
Yes, and it's on at 7 o'clock the same time we're on. So, of course, you should listen to us and then record the gubernatorial debate and watch it later. Isn't that right?
Yes, all these things. You can always catch the video online later.
Three letters, DVR. Okay, that's it. We're out of time. Laura, catch you next week.
Thanks, Dennis.
You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back in the same time slot next week when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.